This program is brought to you by Fresh FM.
This is Dana Wensley, and you're listening to Top Writers. Today, I'm interviewing local author Christine Lunens about her book, A Can of Sunshine. But before we talk to Christine, I want to take a few moments to talk about freedom of speech. I'm the Freedom of Speech spokesperson for PEN in New Zealand. PEN is a worldwide organisation that promotes literature and freedom of expression. This year marks the 400th anniversary of Shakespeare's death. An unlikely event to spark the interest of PEN, but when we scratch the surface, Shakespeare is not far from censorship and controversy. Shakespeare was one of the first in a long list of prominent writers to be censored. In 1807, an English physician by the name of Thomas Boulder published his sanitized version of Shakespeare's works. He sought to reproduce the work of the bard without any of the naughty bits. His work, The Family Shakespeare, was aimed at providing appropriate reading material for his sister and her family. In removing anything that could cause offence to the religious and virtuous mind, these efforts resulted in the physician's name living on in the term boulderize, meaning to remove or modify parts of a text considered vulgar. We may have moved on from such puritanical attempts, but how far have we really come? Now, 400 years after his death, Shakespeare is facing the censors again. You cannot read his plays without encountering manifestations of sexism, racism, anti-Semitism, and violence. But how should we deal with these in the modern context? Former artistic director of the Globe Theatre in London admits that he sometimes censors Shakespeare's works, cutting some unfortunate anti-Semitic things, most notably from works such as The Merchant of Venice. This year we'll see the release of new works revisiting Shakespeare. Just released is a rewriting of The Merchant of Venice by Booker Prize winner Howard Jacobson. His rewriting of Shakespeare, Shylock is My Name, confronts the anti-Semitism full on. The Hogarth Shakespeare series will also feature Margaret Atwood's rewriting The Tempest and Tracy Chevalier taking on Othello. When we start censoring work, we're on a slippery slope that ends in persecution. It's tempting to rewrite texts that don't resonate with today's moral sensibilities, but it's also worth noting that small steps at censorship can grow to obscure works that would otherwise provoke discussion and teach us about our past. This is just one story of one writer. If you want to find out more about what PEN does and how you can be involved, follow the links on the New Zealand Society of Authors website to PEN, or contact me, Dana Wensley, at pen@nzauthors.org.nz.
This show is sponsored by the Top of the South Writers, a branch of the New Zealand Society of Authors. Top of the South Writers is devoted to the interests of writers in the region. It offers talks, workshops, a weekly newsletter, advice about publishing and copyright issues, and much more. You can find out more about Top of the South Writers at topwriters.co.nz.
This is Dana Wensley, and you're listening to Top Writers. Today I'm interviewing local author Christine Lunens about her book, A Can of Sunshine. Born in Connecticut to an Italian mother and a Belgian father, Christine has travelled widely around Europe, Africa and Asia. Her first book, Primordial Soup, won praise in The Times, The Independent and The Publishers Weekly. Later novels have been adapted for film and translated into French, Spanish, Catalan, Dutch, Italian and Czech, to name a few. She now lives in Nelson with her family, where she is busily getting her fourth novel to print. Thanks for coming into Founders Studio today to talk with me, Christine.
Yes, thank you, Dana.
Christine, this is your third book, and I found it a really enjoyable read. A Can of Sunshine immerses you in it quickly, and you feel immediately connected to the characters. And I found myself swiftly embroiled in their lives from page one. So tell us about the book in your own words.
So the story is about Nancy, who's a New Yorker, and her husband, a Kiwi, and his mother, Edith. And they go on holiday into the Fiji Islands, without the mother, of course. And Edith, as a kind of gift for her daughter-in-law and son, decides to come along and take care of her granddaughter and to leave the couple to have romantic time on their own. And she doesn't realize that that's actually being quite invasive. And after a few days of making the best of it, Nancy finally does put her foot down and Mike asks his mother to leave. And that causes her to feel hurt and humiliated. And as she's rushing away, packing her bags, she has an injury as she falls. She ends up in hospital in Fiji, and it's as Mike is driving back and forth between Nancy and his mother that he has a car accident and dies. And there the story begins when they come back to New Zealand. And at first, there's a lot of resentment between them, each blaming the other. Of course, Edith doesn't understand why they had to go so far away to Fiji when there were beautiful places right here in New Zealand. And Nancy believes if his mother had never come in the first place, all this never would have happened. But then a relationship grows because they both share something in common, the love of Mike, and they need to raise Chloe, remembering who their father was. So the book is really about the relationships and everything that they're going to go through and how it's ever changing as time goes by. And naturally, after Nancy's American, so after 9/11, she starts to feel a bit depressed, everything that's happened so far away. She's not there anymore. She starts to go through a midlife crisis. And at that stage, she begins to become involved with another man, and Edith is going to resist. So it's all the changes that are going to go on right to the end, where they'll become very close again once Edith has cancer and they risk losing each other. So it's really the voyage of two women with the ever-changing family dynamics.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for explaining it, because it is such an interesting book, because it does center around those three pivotal characters, the mother-in-law Edith, Nancy, who's, I guess, 40-ish, yes, around that age, and the daughter, Chloe, who is actually wise beyond her years. She strikes me as a really intelligent girl who copes with her dad dying in some ways better than Nancy does.
Yes.
But I like the way you write the characters. Edith is a very strong character and can be quite frustrating for Nancy, but there's also a lot of wit and wisdom and the way you have that interplay between the two of them. And we first meet Edith when she gate crashes her granddaughter's birthday party, doesn't she?
Yes.
Turns up with a dog that she's rescued from the
SPCA
in tow, and just kind of totally dominates that little event that Nancy has spent so long creating. I just wanted to ask you about the writing of the characters, a bit more about that, how you teased out their personalities and the relationship between them all.
What was very tricky about this novel, and I never had this problem with any other novel, is because Nancy was the daughter-in-law and Edith the mother-in-law, I didn't want anyone to take sides. Both characters had to be equally likable. Now, that's not something you have to do, but the mother-in-law, daughter-in-law is a very special relationship. Mm-hmm. And I found that if Nancy kept too quiet, at some stage you thought, oh, she's so passive. You had trouble with her character. And at the same time, if she answered Edith back, you thought, oh, how immature, really, at your age. This is the mother-in-law show, mm-hmm, respect. Mm-hmm. So it was really going along sometimes centimeter by centimeter, yes, each scene, and it would be down to, that's one word too much, that's one word not enough. So it was really very, very long to get the balance where I brought out, it was almost as if I had to bring out a rainbow of emotions each time with each character, that it wouldn't be a black and white relationship. Mm-hmm. So I had to show that each character had a lot of depth and spirituality, mm-hmm, and humor and other things, mm-hmm, so they wouldn't become victim of their role of mother-in-law, mm-hmm, and turn flat. So. Mm.
I think you do that really well. I enjoyed that. Was it necessary that Mike, the husband, died for them to develop that relationship? And it's an interesting plot device, isn't it, that the husband dies very early on and leaves these two women both struggling with their grief and trying to come to terms with how they're going to carry on, or if they're going to carry on with this relationship.
Yes, that was a bit experimental, but I thought, okay, I'm going to get rid of the the bone of contention, so to say, and see what's going to happen between them. And it was interesting because I found that even with him dead, that didn't, the mother-in-law and daughter-in-law relationship were still there. There was no getting rid of it. In fact, till the day they die, they even have that relationship in the moment where she says, okay, well, now I'm your ex-mother-in-law, and she doesn't like her saying that. And so the relationship stays strong, but it does allow them to evolve their own relationship through that and sometimes to overcome that and develop a true friendship just for the sake of one another.
Now, when I first met you, you told me about your PhD and how that was on the role of the mother-in-law in literature. Can you tell us briefly a bit more about that before we hear the song you've selected?
Yes. So the PhD was on the mother-in-law in literature in works in English. There aren't too many books of serious literary fiction where the mother-in-law has, let's say that she has the main role or that she's the central character. But I did manage to find 10 all in all. Sometimes it wasn't really a main role, but she was central to the emotional core of the novel. And I analyzed which ones actually were full characters and which were more stereotypical. So, for example, I found Henry James. I love The Ambassador. I wrote my master's thesis on it. Or The Spoils of Poynton. That's another of his novels. The mother-in-law is stereotypical in The Ambassador's, but he seems to know it and he keeps her well out of sight. So she just pulls the strings. And he keeps the fuller characters to the fore, and the mother-in-law is just in the U.S. pulling the strings on everything that happens in Paris. So it's interesting how he seemed to realize that. And then I explained how other novelists, how they try to deal with her or cope with the fact that it's a mother-in-law. I have one Singaporean author. Her mother-in-law, like another author, she's Indian, she wrote The Dowry Bride. It's very stereotypical mother-in-laws, but at the same time, it's entirely justified because in The Dowry Bride, she explains how brides are burnt when they don't meet the expectations of the family. And in fact, she's describing something that's very real. 20,000 brides are killed each year in India. So I guess it's very realistic to the situation that they're you know, having to put up with over there.
Yeah, it's a very interesting topic, and I'd love to talk to you more about it. But for the moment, do you want to tell us about the song you've chosen and why you chose to play it?
Yes, so I've chosen the band Zorn. It's a local band in Nelson, and the lead singer, Martin Brown, he was with Poppy Dust, a well-known English band. And I love this band's lyrics. It's Axel Zorn, the songwriter. Each song is a bit like a crystallized poem with a story around it. And the music goes hand in hand. So the emotion that you get from the words is fully supported by the strength of the music, I find. So I really enjoy listening to these. It carries me away emotionally as I listen to it, to the story. I get fully taken in. And, well, I'll let you hear this. It also makes me very proud to live in Nelson because for some place it's a beautiful city, it's small, but I find it's always punching well above its weight in the arts, and that it does so with so many arts, whether it's literature, painting, sculpture, glass, here again, contemporary music. I find that, you know, something I feel really proud of.
Mm-hmm. Let's hear the song now. Okay.
Should you look into my eyes tonight, you would see that I hold my love in and tight. Many years it was out of sight, now I let it soar higher than a kite. Every day seems like paradise, so what is it that makes me stare into space? It can happen at sunset, like a chill, like a cut. When I stare at my soul angel upon me, soul angel inside me, soul angel, you haunt me. I have a job, money and success, a gorgeous house at some prestigious address, though a struggle and sometimes distress for a boat afloat required all our strength. Happiness is our daily excess. So what is it that makes me stare into space? It can happen at sunset, like a chill, like a cut, when I stare at my soul angel. Accomplished my goals, look with envy at the paintings in my hall, though a sense that I have to enroll for a higher aim, one that gives it all. Don't decide, don't restrain. If I abide, I'll explain. It's a force, it's the pulse, it's the cure to my pain.
This is Dana Wensley, and you're listening to Top Writers. Today I'm talking to local writer Christine Lunens about her book, A Can of Sunshine. Christine, you've got a reading for us now. Tell us about where it happens in the book, and then would you like to read it?
Okay, so it happens in the book when Nancy knows that Edith has cancer, and she decides to take her on a lovely cruise so that she can die in dignity and in beauty instead of being in the palliative center where she is. They carried on along the quay and down the quay extension to where the bright white ocean liner loomed, a yellow border underlining its name, Sunseeker. In the distance, a foghorn blew as a second passenger liner sailed out to sea. It was getting harder and harder to keep the wheelchair moving. Something was wrong. There was trouble with the wheels, or rather it was Edith, digging the heels of her orthopedic shoes into the concrete. "I don't want to roll over the side. I don't want to drown. I'm not going. Take me back to Rhyme's rest home." Edith gripped the sides of the wheelchair, kicking her legs out while tendons were breaking out of her neck. "Then we'll take your walker. It's too far for me on my feet. I'll never make it. I'll be by you the whole time. You can trust me. Just relax and enjoy the ride. I'm not going to let you go." Unbelievably, Edith checked over her shoulder as if to see what Nancy was really up to. She couldn't have been squeezing the wheelchair handles any harder. Her knuckles were bone white, but the truth seemed to make no difference. "I'm going to roll down the deck," Edith wailed. "I'm going to go overboard. The wheelchair is made of metal. It's heavy. I'm going to sink to the bottom of the sea." "Don't be silly. There are brakes. See here." Nancy pressed the oily lever in and out and showed that she could stop it at the edge of a coin at the cost of a hard halt. "There are guardrails. I would never do anything to hurt you." After some hesitation, she decided it was best to move on, but Edith's upper body fell forward, and the next thing Nancy knew, Edith was screaming and grabbing halfway around herself at nothing. "Help me!" she cried out to passersby. "Help me, please!" The looks of misgiving were too much for Nancy to cope with, and in some part of her mind, Andrews was having a hearty laugh at her. Hadn't Dr. Haas tried to talk her out of it? Wasn't he a specialist in gerontology? Hadn't he patiently spoken about the special needs of Rhyme's patients, their mood swings and unpredictability, and insisted she take extra time to think about the situation? But somehow, in her daily daydream of Edith dying in dignity, breathless beauty wherever she turned, had misted up her judgment. And it was suddenly as clear as day that her dream just wasn't going to materialize, and she was going to have to deal with the reality of an ornery old lady not wanting to board.
I love that bit. There's a lot of tenderness in your book and the way Nancy relates to Edith. And I think anyone that's looked after an elderly relative would identify with that. And after the caring is over, you sometimes miss those parts too. Like Nancy misses the knee-high stockings left in the sink and the way Edith swallows her pills. And there's just all these little details in the book that really spring out. Would you like to tell us about the second song you've chosen?
So the second song, it's Dereliction. It's by the same Nelson group. And so I thought it was very special to play these songs because they're going to be recording soon. They've got, and they're going to have their first gig at the Boathouse Cafe in 19th of August. So because it's a band, I think we'll go very far. I thought it would be very appropriate to have their first time on the air here in Nelson today.
see a child alone in the lounge. His eyes stick hollow at the screen. While his mom gets dressed, prepared for the night, the sound will cover up the screams. And again, this tune will flow in his head, echoing melody of some prophetic man. Touch my wounds, breathe with me, like a mother, turn to me. Touch my pains, sail with me, like a sinner, feel like me. Dereliction. I see a man like a stone at his desk. His eyes gaze empty at the screen. While his phone gets filled with days and playmates, his home is cemetery neat. And again, this tune will flow in his head, echoing melody of some prophetic man. Touch my wounds, breathe with me, like a mother, turn to me. Touch my pains, sail with me, like a sinner, feel like me. Dereliction.
Christine, I want to thank you so much for coming along and talking with me today on the show.
Thank you for having me, Dan. It's been such a pleasure.
We look forward to your next book, which is tentatively titled South of Memory. But that's all we have time for today. If you want to find out more about Christine, you can look on the internet at Top of the South Writers website at topwriters.co.nz. If you live in the Nelson region, you can buy A Can of Sunshine by popping into Page and Blackmore at 254 Trafalgar Street, or you can find them on the internet at pageandblackmore.co.nz. This is the last in a series of 6 interviews for Top Writers. Previous shows can be heard on podcast. Follow the links to the Fresh FM website. If you want to hear more or have a suggestion for authors for a new series or want to sponsor a show, then let us know by contacting Fresh FM or me, Dana Wensley. Follow the links to my contact page at topwriters.co.nz.
This show is sponsored by the Top of the South Writers, a branch of the New Zealand Society of Authors. You can find out more about Top of the South Writers at topwriters.co.nz.
Thanks to New Zealand On Air for making this program available through funding the Access Internet Radio Project. Cheers, New Zealand On Air.